Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value displays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 13, after a week off because it's so much fun and a little delay because they've even more fun. We are back and ready to get things going for you. Going to talk about the top 100 ADP, review it. That's what our plan was last week, so it should be a lot of fun to see what went right, what went wrong so far in draft season as we are at the halfway point of the season. We'll talk weekly matchups and all kinds of other fun stuff as usual. You can find myself on Twitter at BDintric and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, man?
Doing excellent, Bubba. Yeah, a little bit of a different flavor this week. A Friday matinee for us, but that's all right. Anytime we can kind of hang and talk baseball on the way to the weekend is a good thing. Exciting show, I think. Exciting topic tonight, today. I just keep saying tonight. Top 100. And just kind of looking back, like, at draft season. I know we're only halfway through the year, or at least we're maybe a game or two past. But a good time to kind of check back and see what went right, what went wrong. I do know that we were kind of usurped with the top 100 by the FTN Fantasy podcast with Vlad Sedler and Maddie Davis. I have not listened to that yet. I know they did kind of like a top five rounds or something recap. Yeah. So I didn't want to bias myself before the episode. I'll check them out this weekend sometime. But yeah, kind of funny. We great minds think alike had the same kind of idea at the midway point.
If life didn't get in the way, we would have knocked this one out and been first to the table and been no worries. But here we are.
Excuses, excuses. It's all good.
Always. The top 100 would be lots of fun. But as usual, we'll kick things off with recent news. And we actually have more this week than usual, unfortunately. But we'll try to fly through it here and see what we can find. We start off with Yusei Kikuchi going to the IL with a neck injury, apparently. I think it's because he's getting shelled. But we'll see how that goes. I was funny because on Tuesday's show with Toby, I was like, I took the two steps. I was looking forward to it. He got a great matchup against Oakland, gets shelled. I'm like, maybe he just gets hurt and misses his next start. Well, here we are. He's getting the IL stint. What's your thoughts on this one? I think it's more of a, let's just give him a breather.
Could be. I had Kikuchi on TGFBI for that reason too, for this week. And I guess getting shelled by Oakland, I guess he gave up like four runs, but that probably is technically,
I think he walked like five though and hit two. He couldn't throw a strike. It was horrible.
Yeah. So maybe a little bit of like a Carlos Carrasco type. You're getting shelled. We're going to take you out and IL you. Either way, like, their performance hasn't been great. And like, it's funny. We talked about everyone kind of talked about the Toronto rotation heading into the season. And that is a beleaguered rotation right now. Jose Berríos is healthy, but like, obviously not pitching that great. You've got Kikuchi out. You've got Hyunjin Ryu out. You've got Gossman kind of out. I mean, it's an ankle thing. It's not a not an arm thing. There's not really, and Pearson hasn't pitched. So like the saviors are obviously Alek Manoah and then like Ross Stripling right now holding it together. There's not really a replacement that I'm looking at, even in like AL Tout Wars. It's just that they have been hit so hard that the rotation depth is just not there. And it's kind of interesting, like the Jays, just from a real baseball standpoint, are falling back. I mean, they're fourth in the AL East. I think they're still three or four games above 500, but lost to the Mariners last night, Thursday night. And I think the Mariners are like three games out of the wild card. So if the Blue Jays do not improve and get that rotation back healthy, it's going to be an interesting summer to see how they patch this together. They also have a few underperforming hitters we'll probably talk about later on too in the top 100. So
most definitely we will talk about them. Yeah, the rotation's a joke. That's the best way I could say it. So I'm curious to see what they do, because if they're still in it, you'd imagine they've put so much in, they've invested so much already, they're gonna have to make a move, you'd think. But like Frankie Montas would have been a good one. But let's talk Frankie Montas. Shoulder injury, and he's basically day-to-day. He's going to miss at least one start. I think he might find the IL here pretty soon. It's like, why do the A's want to rush him back? They need him healthy to trade him. This makes no sense. There's really no replacement in Oakland unless I'm oblivious to the situation. So it's a bad deal, because Montas was actually pitching pretty darn good, and we were just waiting for the day he got traded to a real team, but that just is not going to happen right now, Ryan.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's karma as opposed to unfortunate for the A's for what they did to that team this year and their kind of one major trade piece that they have in Montas is IL'd as we approach the deadline. So, not much of a takeaway. Like this, their top starting pitcher in the minors, I have already been burned by this season. That's Zach Logue. Just did not do much for me at all. I think Oakland's just going to try and piece this together, play out the string with pitchers that you really don't, outside of like a really great matchup at home in that park, you don't really want to be surfing in these waters. It's ugly. It's been ugly all season. I don't think it's going to get much better. A's fans.
No, Irvin had some hope at one time. Caprillion had some hope at one time, and it's bleak. Deep, deep leagues is where that hope goes. So, just stay away from Oakland for the most part. It's a rough go. I will say, side note, somehow in a Yahoo, Ramon Laureano's like 25% rostered, so you guys got to fix that because he's actually playing good. But just want to throw that out there. That one, I saw that last night, and that shocked me. I'm like, I know Yahoo's different, but 25%, guys, come on. Like, he's a little better than that. Next up, Michael Lorenzen to the IL with a shoulder injury. That's never good, of course, and he's had a rough go of it. The take home here is bring back Reed Detmers. It's either good for stacking against in DFS or rostering in leagues. I'm not going to roster him. So what's your thoughts on Reed Detmers?
It's interesting. Yeah, like we've talked about Detmers a couple of times on the pod, obviously, that after the no hitter, but then getting sent back down, and I kind of crapped on his no hitter because it was like a two strikeout performance. But Reed Detmers, his last start at AAA Salt Lake, 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 14 strikeouts and 90 pitches. Like, it's easy to say that you've been burned by him and you're not going to pick him up. You just immediately kind of shoo him away. I believe Detmers is pitching this afternoon or tonight, Friday night. And so we'll see what he looks like. If he pitches well in that outing, I might actually be interested in Fab this weekend, just because I don't have any kind of inside information or whatever, but when someone turns that around, even though it's a AAA start like that, did he go back to the minors, work on something that we don't know about, and now something's starting to click? I am actually pretty interested in at least watching Detmers this evening and seeing what happens, because I do think that we need to, oftentimes in fantasy, have short memories for some of these guys that have burned us in the past. And Detmers could be that guy. I mean, he's got the prospect pedigree. He's got the stuff. Like, he's on people's radars, or was on people's radars for a reason, and it just hasn't clicked for him. But anytime you kind of, and this is kind of when you jump, especially on pitchers that can kind of change themselves real quick, if it's a mechanical tweak, new pitch, velocity, whatever, definitely going to be watching his start Friday night and closely, and maybe even bidding on the guy in Fab.
Yeah, part of me wishes he wasn't pitching till like Monday, because he could go get him for like a buck or two and speculate. Because if he deals tonight, we know how that story is going to go. Because the one thing you mentioned is there were a lot of very smart people that were high on him coming into the season. So the pedigree's there. And we saw signs of it, especially in spring training, which I know is not the end all be all in the air is AAA, but he's showing he can throw strikes. He's showing he can dominate hitters. The A's are a AAA team, so he's going to get to play them a few times. Like, there's options out there for him to take advantage of situations. So it's definitely something to monitor on Friday night, as Ryan said. This one stings. Evan Longoria, he's like everybody's like, he's an old guy, but he's got some power, hits lefties well. Goes to the IL with a left oblique injury, which is never good, especially for the power situation. Bright side is the world is about to find out who David Villar is. And David Villar had some serious pop in the minors this year and last year, over 20 home runs already this year in the minors. And the early numbers aren't great, but he's barreling the ball almost 29% of the time. So, and the max EV not great, still a 101. So I'm very optimistic. This is, and people know that I'm very pessimistic when it comes to the Giants. I at least like the idea of a VR, especially in deeper formats, to produce some power for you. So what's your thoughts on this Longoria situation? I think VR will be the guy. Then again, they will might platoon for all we know, but I think they're going to give him a little bit of a run here.
Yeah, VR, and the interesting thing too, like I just, you know, no offense to your boys, but from a fantasy standpoint, I get so nervous rostering San Francisco hitters just because of the platoon thing and all that. VR, since he got called up in four games this week, they faced two lefties, two righties, and he started all four games. So he played second base, and that's the other thing. He played second base against the lefties and played third base against the righties on Wednesday and Thursday. So it sounds like, or at least so far, it looks like San Francisco is going to at least give him some everyday run and kind of see what happens. So yeah, you see like the double A slash line last year, 275, 374, 507. And then this year, triple A on base over 400, slugging 630. Like, I know triple A caveats aside, but this is somebody who I'm pretty interested in if he continues to play every week. We'll see how long Longoria is out, but yeah, David VR, it's not always promising to roster someone on your team who's number 70,
yeah,
wearing number 70 on the field. It does have that kind of late March spring training vibe, but you can't argue with the recent results. And if the playing time's there, you know, why not take a shot?
Yeah, I'm intrigued. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. This one stings. Tyler Molle was pitching very, very well this year. Shoulder strain. He's reporting that it's not too serious and expects to be back right after the All-Star break. Anytime I hear a shoulder strain, I don't care how serious it is, it's still concerning. But he was getting it together in a very big way. Graham Ashcraft, I think, is the benefactor of this, if that's what you want to call it. But what's your thoughts on this Molle situation?
Yeah, I think Ashcraft gets a little longer run, which, you know, may or may not be actually good for your team. Nick Lodolo's back, so like from a timing standpoint, that doesn't hurt the Reds too much. Obviously, you hate to lose Molle because, like you said, Bubba, you know, terrible start to the season. Molle had a 6.45 ERA, five April starts. In June, he had a 2.94 ERA and a 39-6 strikeout to walk rate. Like that is some pretty darn good improvement. And so I don't know. It's always with shoulders. It's always easy to get real scared. And you just kind of hope in this instance that it's more of like, and we might start to see this a little bit more this coming week, a pre-All-Star break shutdown. Like, you know, take the week off before the All-Star break. Then you get the All-Star break. It goes, you know, you kind of get 2 weeks off to rest. The Reds have nothing to play for. That's the optimistic side. That's what I'm hoping for. And from all accounts, that's what it seems like. Mm-hmm. We've been burned by trusting, you know, media reports at face value before. So it's hard to tell, but that's the hope, is that Ashcraft gets maybe a couple more starts, goes back down, Lodolo sticks. He's got Luis Castillo in there for now. We'll see what happens with that trade. And then Molle comes back after the All-Star break, ready to go.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm hoping it's not too serious. And you mentioned that we might be seeing this. Like, Lorenzen seems kind of serious, but I think this is already the third shoulder strain we've discussed so far to start the show. And now we have a fourth one, Kyle Hendricks to the IL with the shoulder strain. And he's been pitching pretty bad this year, but he seemed to be getting, before his last start, was getting better. So it's kind of surprised me. I didn't see him get hurt or anything, but who knows? We'll see. Anderson Espinosa got the call. He's kind of a long man. Doesn't look like the Cubs will need a fifth man, I think, through the All-Star break, so we'll see. But Hendricks, maybe it's a breather to get things right for him as well. We'll see.
Yep, absolutely.
Jake Berger to the IL. This is kind of a bummer because he was hitting really well, kind of cooling down a little bit, platooning with Gavin Sheets. But he's going to the IL. Any thoughts on Berger? Is he droppable? What's your status on him?
Probably droppable. Kind of sucks the timing. Droppable in leagues where you don't have IL, just because the IL stints are piling up. See how long he's out for. But Jake Berger was, picking things up pretty well recently. And now it's kind of funny. Like, it's gone first circle. Now it's Yoan Moncada, who has been playing third base every day. But now I know Moncada was banged up or got hurt later in or the middle of this week. So who knows, man? It's the White Sox. They have had one of the worst fits of injury luck of any team this season. They've got a pretty brutal lineup that they're rolling out there, even with Tim Anderson at the top. I know they just got Eloy back, so they're kind of getting back to full strength, but they just can't seem to all be healthy at the same time.
Yeah, it's a shame, because it seemed like after last season they were so close to like doing it, and now they just can't stay healthy right now. And that's the shame of it all. A couple more to discuss quickly here. Chris Taylor out with a fractured foot. My goodness, that's another one. You know, Ozzie Albies had that one. Now I got Chris Taylor. The Dodgers always had that embarrassment of riches of depth. But I will say this much: when you look at roster resource, and I was actually watching the game, I think it was last night or the night before, and Jake Lamb is playing regularly for them. He's scheduled at DH, and I literally had to double take. Go, wait, Jake Lamb is getting playing time in LA? I thought this team was deep, but this is where we're at right now.
When I lived in Arizona, watched the Diamondbacks every day, and we all called him Rake Lamb. And we were fired up, and Rake Lamb never hit against lefties. Would never play against lefties, and there's always free Rake Lamb. And I don't know. I guess we were a little bit too. Little bit too optimistic there. So yeah, like the ghost of Jake Lamb is back, and who knows if, you know, maybe find some magic with the Dodgers. It's going to be a platoon. It's going to be Jake Lamb and probably like Trace Thompson going against lefties with Lamb on the strong side of the platoon. It does. I will say I have Chris Taylor in a lot of leagues, and just kind of the versatility, the five categories that, you know, modest five category production, but five category nonetheless, that's a huge hit. At all the positions he was, I think it was second, third, and outfield. So like you get all the corners, the middles, very helpful throughout the season. And fractured foot, it sounds bad. Like it sounds at least August. I have a decision to make this weekend. I know in my main event of whether to keep Chris Taylor or not, will kind of depend on what the add options are, but that's going to be, I think that's a tough decision at this point, just because he's not like a stud, but he's super useful. However, probably out at least a month, and there are only, you know, 2.5 months to go.
Yeah. Cause I think it was Albies was 6 to 8 weeks when he went out with his. So we got to imagine it's a pretty rough go on this one. A couple other quick hitters here. Kurt Casale is going to be out for quite a while with his injury. Joey Bart is back, almost went deep in his first at bat, but some fan decided to be a dumb fan, got me all excited, and then screwed it up. But I'm a Bart believer. I don't know if he presses too much in the bigs, but there is legit offensive talent in that profile. He just hasn't been able to figure it out in the bigs. Maybe he never will. Maybe it's just fool's gold, but the dude's good. So are you going back to the Joey Bart well?
Dude is good, and I've mentioned this in the past, like that transition to Cal. I think we talked pretty in depth about this when Gabriel Moreno was getting called up with Toronto. It's just like it's such a hard transition for catchers. A lot of times you do not see them really start to produce until year three, year four. Joey Bart is still plenty young enough to turn this around. We're actually seeing it a little bit accelerated timeline with Adley Rutschman, who has absolutely caught fire this season, kind of all in 1 year with Baltimore. Bart's been in the bigs for a couple years, but would not be surprised at all if one of these times it just starts to click for Joey Bart. The talent has not gone away. I think it's more of just an adjustment thing. So if you are in two catcher leagues, Joey Bart is, I think, an absolutely fine plug-in for your second catcher spot. I'm not super confident in like one catcher leagues. I don't know. I wouldn't call him a top 12, top 15 catcher the rest of the way. But he was probably cut in your two catcher leagues when he went back down. And so I would absolutely take a stab. I you're just looking for guys with a pulse, and he's going to play with Casale out. I forgot about this. This was like over the weekend, but Yermín Mercedes is on the Giants. And
dude, I almost started crying the other night. Cause I was happy he was on the Giants, but then like, I think I was recording to the Toby or something. They're playing the D-backs. I got the game on, and Mercedes is hitting third. And I'm like, that's not a good sign. That's not a good sign. Like, I like him and all, but he does not have to be hitting third in a bay. Like, that was not a good sign. So.
No, and the other blast from the past name I was watching, just because I have Trevor Rogers everywhere, watching a Marlins game, and Williams Astudillo was playing second base. I was like,
little Tortuga. Yep. Not good. Doing his thing. So, yeah, some rough days. So anyway, yeah. Rough days.
It's fun to see those names. And I don't think your mean Mercedes is going to gonna have too much of an impact there. I think Bart's gonna get some leash, and absolutely interested if I need a second catcher.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat, and that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain, and they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Most definitely. Brian Bayo, a highly touted Boston Red Sox prospect, made his debut this past week, and it happens a lot of debuts. Guys are a little jacked up and everything. 4 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. Not what you'd expect from Bayo, but there were a couple positive notes for those pitching geniuses out there that broke it down. He's going to be a popular ad, I'd imagine, this week with all the injuries in Boston. He should get a couple starts at least to see if he can figure it out. So how I know in AL leagues are going to be very aggressive, but how are you approaching him in your other leagues?
It's tough. I watched a start. You could definitely tell, like, I get why there's some prospect shine there. The stuff looked really good. The ground ball rate in the minors has been fantastic. And yeah, maybe he was just amped up because the command was not there with those 3 walks. So it will keep his price down, I think, over Fab. I say that, but pitching is such a wasteland, as we've talked about many times, that people may be still paying up. I'm interested. I'm not going to blow the bank. I'm probably in a $1,000 fab league, like in a main, I probably looking at like $40, which is maybe like, I don't know, 20% of my remaining budget. So something like that is probably something where I'd look at Bayo, just because the talent is there. It has to click with the command, and you're kind of banking on it as the first start jitter. So we'll see, but I think we'll get some run.
And I really want him to do well, because I want that name to stick around, because there's so many cool things you could do with Bayo. Oh, yeah. And especially when he's pitching in the Bronx and he's beating them with that Bronx accent, getting very angry at him. They need to keep him up. That's all I'm saying. I have a big sense of humor, so I'm all about having some fun with that. Last but not least, Anthony Sclafani out for the rest of the season after having surgery on his foot. Looks like Sammy Long is going to get the first push at it. Don't go crazy, people.
Oh, don't go crazy. I think the play here is Jacob Junis. I think Jacob Junis is going to be back. You probably know better than me, but probably around the All-Star break, maybe a start before that. That's the guy you want to take. Yep. And even if you have to eat him a week on your bench or whatever, if you can go a week early this weekend in Fab and grab Jacob Junis, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I almost did it last week, and I looked at the notes, and he's supposed to throw probably 2 more bullpens and then a rehab start or two. So I was going to wait till this week to start putting my bids in. Maybe I'll regret that. Maybe more people will be doing the same thing, but this is definitely the week to go stash some Jacob Junis, because we have this full week, and then we have the partial All-Star game week before we get back to action. So I'd expect Junis back probably that first full week after that, so go get him now while you can before rumblings. What'll happen is he'll make a rehab start while it's the All-Star break, so it's the only thing people will talk about, so now he'll be expensive again the following week. So make sure you go and take care of business beforehand. All right, let's talk. I know it's a little different being on a Friday, so it's not as convenient for some, but we can talk some weekend matchups here as we head into the weekend and do our thing, and then we'll talk contest in a minute. But when you're looking at the weekend matchups, Ryan, what really stands out to you this week? Because we got 3 in Great American Small Park. That's always the first place I go to. But no Coors Field. So what do you like this week?
Yeah, no Coors, no no volume advantages or disadvantages. I'm not sure the weather on Friday, but it looks like everyone's playing three games. Easiest matchups, according to HQ's tool, is Atlanta. They get three games against the lowly Nationals. And I think they skip Josiah Gray.
They do.
There are a lot of Grays pitching.
Yes, they do. Yeah, Jonathan
the other
Gray's
two Grays
pitching,
are pitching each other tonight. But they get, so Atlanta gets gets three at home against the Josiah Grayless Nats. Milwaukee is another really good matchup. They're at home against Pittsburgh, which I'm actually leaning into that series heavily with my picks this weekend.
Yes,
so
you are.
Couple fun ones, like the Cubs go to LA. Cubs have the worst matchup rating of any team this season or this weekend, just because at LA that pitching staff is fantastic. So staying away from, and that's kind of the interesting one, is like the teams where they're not, you know, it's not like the Yankees or Astros where you're pretty much playing all those guys. It is more like the Cubs. Are you starting or sitting Christopher Morel, Nico Hoerner, Schwindel, Wisdom, like those kinds of guys are more of your, like, depending on your league size, your fringe that you want to look at based on matchups.
Yeah, I set my NFBC lineups before the show, and I benched all my Cubs, unless I didn't have a choice, basically. So that definitely happened. Pittsburgh has a very close runner-up to the Cubs in tough matchups against Milwaukee this weekend. And you weren't going to probably start a lot of Pittsburgh Pirates anyways, but that's something to monitor as well. I am surprised. I guess it shows massive respect to the Tampa Bay pitching staff. It also helps that Shane McClanahan's pitching on Friday, which he's the second highest rated pitcher, according to the Baseball HQ ratings for the day, behind Charlie Morton, hint, hint. But Cincinnati's got a tough go there against Tampa Bay. But I'm guessing it's mainly McClanahan based because they are in Great American Small Park, which we tend to love.
Actually, and that'll be a good series because Cincinnati's throwing out Castillo, Hunter Green, and Lodolo. Like that's
very
awesome.
Excited
that,
to see
that.
That
actually
matchup.
might be
the best
Cincinnati matchup. That might be that would be one of the highlights
for viewing quality. That might be the best matchup of the week. Like because you look at a lot of them, like Cubs, Dodgers, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Houston, Oakland. You're just like, I'm good. But you got some talent there. That Cincinnati, Tampa Bay series. Like anytime McClanahan's on the bump, I'm in. I think Seattle, Toronto's interesting. You talked about Toronto and Seattle, like that wild card race. I know it's only July. People think it's crazy, but a weekend series, this could make a lot of difference late in the season. So that could be a very fun one as well as teams are trying to find their footing for the wild card. So
half tempted to drive up I-5 with the toddler this weekend and check one of those. Cause Toronto, it's not a rivalry, but Seattle being so close to Canada, I know opposite coast, but Toronto fans show up in Seattle and it's almost like more Blue Jay fans than Mariner fans. Sometimes that's always a really just good atmosphere anyway. And then on top of that, you throw on some pretty good pitchers going this weekend, really on both sides. That'll be a fun one to watch for sure.
Yeah, that really surprised me. Rowdy Tellez was on the Chris Rose rotation this week. Excellent interview. I already knew I liked Rowdy before. He's from Northern California. Awesome dude. But he mentioned that one of the best games for the road with the Jays was always in Seattle. And it took me a second. It took me a second because I'm like, well, they're closer to like Buffalo, New York area. Like, what are they doing? It's just everyone because they want like vacations. They want to go to the West Coast. So it's the perfect deal. Then they go like down to California and make a whole trip out of it. And he says it's always like 75% Jays fans during that series. He said it's crazy.
And I know it's Rowdy Tellez, but very rowdy Jays fans. They like to lubricate and check it out. So it's a good atmosphere. And it's funny. Funny he mentioned that because I wasn't aware of that interview because it doesn't really get talked about a lot.
I never would have guessed it. Yeah.
It's wild.
It's pretty cool. I never would have guessed it. I love to hear that teams are traveling like that, but pretty cool stuff indeed. All right, let's play some games here. You want to recap how last week went, or you want me to recap it?
I don't want to. It was a bloodbath, man. You get the honors.
I mentioned last week I was playing Jaron Duran because he's leading off and probably gets him about 5 at-bats a game, which gets him 15 at-bats, and he had racked up 8 runs, RBIs, and hits against the Chicago Cubs. Big fan of that one, to the 1 run RBI and hit from Josh Smith for Mr. Bloomfield. So we'll call that, you know, it's a shame it only counts as 1 point in the win column. That's all I'm going to say. But then we went
match play. This is
match play. Exactly. Golf terms. This is why I love match play, to be honest. You can blow up a hole and it doesn't matter.
And then on the pitching side of things, and I'm only enjoying this because the week before Ryan kicked my butt. So this is like a victory lapping here. I had Brad Keller pitching 4 strikeouts. I believe that's against the Oakland Athletics. That's what we were going for there. And then he was very high on Ryan Feltner going up against the Miami Marlins, I believe. Yep. And that netted 2 strikeouts, which is ironic because it was like the week before I thought, okay, I'll play Nick Martinez versus the Rockies. He can probably give me a few strikeouts, and he got 1. So it's just such a fun game we play, Ryan. It's so baseball, so predictable.
That Feltner 2-step killed me. It was actually, Minnesota. So it was at Miami. He had that 2-step at Miami was the first of those 2. And then Feltner went at Minnesota. 2 strikeouts in each of those 2 games, and we have not seen or heard from Ryan Feltner since then. So, and then on my, I picked Josh. This is the last time I do this, man. I picked Josh Smith just to troll your Ezekiel Duran pick the week before. And
maybe there's something about picking the Rangers. Yeah. Maybe it's something about the Rangers third base position. We should just avoid at all costs. It's too good. Too good. But now we're even on the season. It's
good week for you. Now it's on the season we're 3-3. We're dead even. So
3-3. It's a beautiful thing. And I will say this much before we get into our picks. There were actually a lot of options, at least in the hitting department this week. And that made it fun. Pitching, still pitching, but hitting is a lot better. So I'll let you have the floor. You said you're leaning heavily into a certain series, so I'll let you have the floor on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to hit that Milwaukee-Pittsburgh series. So on the pitching side, I am taking JT Brubaker, who I've actually streamed. I picked him up in mixed labor, 15-team mix, the last couple weeks, and he's got me a couple wins. I think he's 2-7, but the 2 wins have been very recently and has just, in general, been a lot better pitcher lately. So he's got a 4.28 ERA on the season, 3.56 ERA over the last month over Brubaker's last 5 starts. And you go a little bit deeper into those numbers. Brubaker has a 21% strikeout rate, so like league average, but the swinging strike, he's getting a ton of whiffs. And swinging strike rate is like the metric I look at to see if that strikeout rate may increase or decrease. And the 13% swinging strike for Brubaker over his last 5 starts is really good given the alternatives there. So I went Brubaker. I know he's going, I believe it's on the road at Milwaukee. And my hitter pick is Milwaukee. We'll go to your pitcher first, but I just like the fact that he's missing bats. He has been missing bats over the last month, even more so. And so that usually leads to K's. So I'm hoping to get like a handful from the Brubaker this weekend and take you down.
I hope so too, because I actually roster him in a lot of leagues, especially 15s. Like, there's upside to Brubaker for sure. So, I like that pick. That was my runner-up pick, and I was debating between him, but I like Milwaukee, so I was kind of timid there. But I went with one that has worked that you used earlier this year for a victory, and I think I'm using the same mindset you used that week. And I'm going with Germán Márquez at the Arizona Diamondbacks. Márquez coming off 9 strikeout performance in his last go around at the Dodgers, couple of hiccups between that, and then struck out 7 against the Padres. He's basically struck out 6 or more in 3 or 4 of his last 6, which I like to see. Struck out 7 against the D-backs earlier this year. They're pretty much letting him go 5-6 innings, no matter how many runs he gives up these days, which is what I really was looking at when I was looking to stream him. It's like they just have no choice right now because all their pitching's bad. It's like, okay, Germán, you're going to let the bullpen rest a little bit today. So go get him, and he's going to get his 5 or 6 innings. He's going to hopefully get you at least a K in inning. And we've talked about it before on this streaming. That's all you're looking for is a K in inning, and you're going to be okay. D-back strike out quite a bit versus righties the past month. It's never comfortable doing Germán Márquez, even on the road these days, but I'm going to go Germán Márquez against the Arizona Diamondbacks and cross my fingers that we can get 5 to 6 Ks and fewer than 4 runs, so he makes it 6 innings. That's what I'm going for.
I mean, I like it. Matchup's good. I don't think we in our rules, in our constitution, we have a thing where you can pick the same guy twice, so not like a one and done thing. But I took Márquez for a lot of those reasons earlier on. So.
Yeah, we can't do a one and done thing. Otherwise, we'll run out of players real quickly.
That's a good point. It'll get to September. We'll be taking middle. Yeah. I'll be taking Griffin Jacks, middle relievers, and It might come to that. So we'll leave that out of the, I'll strike it from the Constitution if I
do. There we go. Good to hear. Good to hear. All right. Who do you got for your bat this week, who I have rostered in a lot of draft champions leagues right now, or draft and hold leagues right now?
Jace Peterson on the bat. So kind of going a little bit against Brubaker, but Peterson has really been hitting pretty well lately and playing every day against, at least against right-handed pitchers. Over the last week, he's been 5-for-15, which is great. Over the last month, Jace Peterson is 20-for-72, hitting like .280 with two homers, two steals. I know steals and homers, I guess homers are a category in our thing here because it's runs, hits, and RBI. But that production has come with pretty solid power metrics across the board. Good contact. Like I like everything. The one downside with Jace Peterson, at least this weekend, he's probably not going to start on Sunday. Milwaukee gets Jose Quintana, a lefty, on Sunday. But the other two ones are Brubaker, who, again, I like the strikeout potential, but there are some other issues there, and then Thompson on Saturday. So I think Peterson, at least for the two games that he's active, going to be pretty productive, and then I'll hope for a at-bat or two later in the game on Sunday, and we'll see what shakes out there.
Yeah, I'm going back. I had to like double-check to make sure I hadn't used this portion yet this year because I know I mentioned him on previous shows that he's heating up, and then he cooled down real quickly, but he's kind of heating up again. He's homered in back-to-back games, two or more hits in three of his last five. He's always a streaky guy, but more importantly, Aaron Hicks is facing a actually pretty juicy matchup this week. This weekend, he has the Red Sox, but it's Seabold, Crawford, and then the potentially struggling Nick Pivetta. So he's got three starts for sure, unless they decide to give him an off day for some reason. He's hit anywhere between third, sixth, and seventh. So he might have a great spot in the order to drive in runs and score some runs. And if you just look at his last few games, and again, you never know what can happen. If we do the runs, hits, and RBIs just over the last three games, that's a whopping 5, 9. That'd be 14. That'd be like some kind of record. So I'm just gonna throw that out there. If you can do half of that, I'm in. So I went with Aaron Hicks just for the upside of the matchups, but there were a lot of good choices this week. I thought that we could add some fun ones. And again, for people, it's players rostered in less than 50% of NFBC OCs. We couldn't just go willy-nilly out there, but it makes for a fun matchup to look at.
Yep, and hopefully something in weekly league, or sorry, in daily leagues and that sort of thing, you guys can pick up your own guys and use our method or our reasoning for picking some of these guys in your own leagues. That's kind of the point of it. And we just, I don't know, we are both competitive and like games, so why not do it that way? So.
Exactly. It's a little fun to the game. And people have reached out and said they like it. Like, we've had people ask us how the standings are going and stuff. So
we've had requests. Maybe we'll make the board here viewable. But yeah, we've had requests for score updates. I don't think during the weekend.
It's usually like a Sunday night.
We've
reached
that level of attention. But yes, we've gotten a few, you know, who won last week kind of a thing. So we'll see.
All right. All right, the moment of the show everyone looks forward to, the Bloom Boards. And this is a fun one. You know, Ryan tweeted it out last week. He updated the stats for it for this week. But it'll be the top 100 review of ADPs. It'll be hitters and it'll be pitchers. Try to see, like, who's been producing, who hasn't been, you know, batting average-wise, power, stolen bases. The big roto stats you're looking for the most part. So before we dig into it, Ryan, if you want to add anything to what you put together on the Bloom Board.
Not really. I mean, so the ADP I'm taking is from the NFBC main event. So this is all very late March ADP. So a lot of your kind of, I think Julio Rodriguez, was he top 100?
He should have been by the March.
I'm trying to find him. Type of guy would be up there very, you know, because it is a late March thing. So ADP is at the end of draft season. And basically just wanted to look at, I mean, there's nothing like too deep or metrics or sort of anything like that, more just like a general view. I put the actual Bloom Board. I did put like your main roto category. So for pitchers, I put ERA, whip, and Ks for the starters, ERA, whip, and saves for the relievers that went in the top 100, and just kind of color coded it. So you could quickly see, and obviously we're not going to talk about everyone in the top 100, but just like general trends that kind of pop up when you do that. You can see where kind of the pockets of green are for the starting pitchers. There are definitely some pockets of red for hitters. So the hitters, I just did average, homers, and steals. And it's just kind of interesting, I think, to look back at this halfway point and just see, like, what we thought in draft season that was true. You know, wait on starting pitching. Well, maybe that works. Maybe that doesn't. Wait on second base, because I know that I was talking about this, because there's a whole cluster of second basemen in, you know, 70 to 80 range, and just pick one of those guys. And so it's just, it's fun to kind of look back and see so far how your preseason assumptions may be correct, or in my case, often incorrect.
It's also fun to see where some of the massive value picks are, because usually, you know, we talk about how we try to predict this game, and I'll admit there's luck involved. You have to get it right and get the right guy. It's very simple. And if you get that guy that has a career year and he outperforms his draft value by X amount of rounds, it's pretty obvious what's going to take place here. And seeing some of these names, you're just like, oh, wow, that's impressive. But you mentioned it, a lot of green on the hitters and then some red spots. Most of the early round hitters did pretty well. That's like, you know, Juan Soto hitting 231 is quite a shocker. He had an ADP of 4, but really you don't have too many complaints, at least in the top 10 or 12 there. You know, you weren't expecting Vlad to steal much, but most of your top hitters are at least, I guess, performing the way we'd expect, don't you think?
Yeah, the only red that we're looking in the first round, so the top 15 hitters, is the zero bags for Vlad Jr., which you signed up for when you got Vlad Jr., and Juan Soto, like you said, Bubba, hitting 231. That's another red cell in there. That's pretty fascinating. I don't have RBI on here, but I would imagine that's pretty red high. Too. Yeah.
I think most of his home runs have been solo because of the Nationals. So
the other hitters, sure, like early on where you've got red is your injuries. So like Ozzie Albies is red. I mean, wasn't lighting the world on fire before the injury, but just hasn't had a chance to kind of correct for it. Luis Robert, 9 homers, hasn't been great, but he's missed a bunch of time. So on a per game basis, he's probably been fine. But yeah, it's been interesting. That first round of hitters, like pretty much no matter who you picked, you're in really good shape.
Yep, doing it.
Bryce Harper's green, but not anymore.
Yeah, that one's a shame, because he might have been like, it'll be fun to do like auction values or something at the end of the season and see how they really jumped, because he was on his way to a big one. So that would have been pretty cool. And then it gets interesting, guys like Buxton, you know, he's hitting only 218 with 2 steals with 22 homers. So it's been like good for powers, not great for most things. So that's been rough. But Machado's been awesome. Yordan's been a freak. Everyone talks about Aaron Judge, which I get. He's hitting 287, picked 44, 30 homers. But, you know, I guess it's 13 picks earlier, a round earlier, but Yordan at 313 with 25 homers. No steals, though, but that's a pretty crazy stat line. And it goes back to the conversation of the preseason of why pick Vlad when you can wait a round or two for Yordan. And they're proving that one to be pretty true here.
Absolutely. And it was surprising to me that, I talked about the Toronto rotation at the beginning, kind of alluded to this, but surprisingly, because I don't have Vlad Jr. anywhere, so like he's kind of off my radar. I just kind of assume he's a 300 hitter, and that's, you know, that's part of the package. But 265 for Vlad is bad. Yeah. I mean, obviously 265 in a vacuum is above average for batting average, but you rostered Guerrero for that like extreme batting average cushion. The homers are there. I mean, the 19 homers. But 265 is certainly not what you signed up for. And even like Bo Bichette, I took Bo Bichette 5th overall in labor. He's been okay, like 13 homers, 5 steals, but 257 is also not what I signed up for. And then a little bit further down the list with the Reds, some of it is injury related, of course, but Teoscar, who I've had a lot of as well, looking pretty red for that same reason. So just an interesting year in Toronto.
I'm glad you mentioned Teoscar. Definitely a lot of injury early on. He's been back, of course, and I'm pulling it up because I feel like he's been hitting a little better of late, but a lot of zeros in there too. So I'm hoping things turn around for him. I'll say that much, because I had much higher expectations for Teoscar Hernandez as well coming into the season. Obviously, like I said, Aaron Judge is just amazing. Chris Bryant jumped up to ADP at 53, finally hit his first home run of the season the other day. So
yeah,
that was an oops.
One homer, 1-0 steals. That's red on the board. And this board, I'll probably repost it this Friday afternoon. So you can kind of, if you're listening, you want to track along or whatever. But yeah, one homer, 0 steals. Hey, Chris Bryant's hitting 284.
He missed a lot of time too. A lot of empty time too. It is interesting though. We saw Salvi Perez 211, 11 homers, 0 steals. JTR 247 homers, 11 steals, which is great for a catcher. But You got those two early catchers, even Will Smith, that's pick 66, 253, 13, zero homers. None of the big three catchers, even Varsho, who started out great, struggling. So like the four catchers that are drafted in the top 100, none of them have green except for stolen bases for JTR. So I ask you, in July for next season, are we not drafting catchers early?
That's a really good question. That's also,
none of them are paying off. None of them right now.
That's true. It is. It brings up the bigger question of, and I know we're just halfway through the season now, but let's just assume for argument's sake, it stays this way. And obviously with Sal Perez, it will stay this way. How much do you react to one season like this versus the overall trend? Like JTR and Sal have been, you know, traditionally that's been a pretty stable value. Also, how do you, and this is what I struggle with, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit more on the pitching side, is how do you balance the right plan versus the right players? Yep, so, and that, I mean, that's the age old question, is like, I was a huge component of waiting on starting pitching and then powering up with these bats. And so far, like kind of what we're seeing here, the early bats have produced. But when I waited on pitching, I got a lot of like Trevor Rogers and Charlie Morton, who is turning it around a little bit. And I did not take the Alec Manoas, the Shane McClanahans. Was that the right strategy? You know, it ultimately goes back to the you know, nothing groundbreaking here, but the players that you pick.
Yeah, no, it's and the catcher thing's also kind of tongue in cheek, because obviously a lot can change, but it's kind of like how you build your team, as you're saying. So,
yep,
even the numbers JTR are putting up, if you built your team appropriately, aren't maybe killing you. They might just look red because that's the formula we're using, of course. But for a catcher hitting 240 with 70 homers, 11 steals, probably pretty darn good. It's just what you could have got around him, like two picks later or whatever. You could have got Pete Alonso hitting 281 with 22 homers and two steals. So it's like, that's what you're looking at, that opportunity cost there. But then when he went to catcher later, that whole
deal. And it's a good point, too, of like, so, and I'll go back to the Bo Bichette example. Like, I drafted Bo Bichette thinking I would get really good homers, really good batting average, really good steals. Hasn't been really good, but it also hasn't been like, and I'll harken back to the Vlad thing. It hasn't been where he's hitting 50, 60 points below where I thought and built around that. So it's hurting even more. This was always my case. I know we're kind of going all over the place, but this is always my case against kind of those one trick pony steals guys. The Mondesi is just, it's so hard to build around that. You draft a Mondesi, you think you're okay in steals. Every projection, every draft software, whatever, is going to have your steals through the roof. Well, it's all eggs in one basket. If that's not there, it's just from an overall team build, like risk standpoint, that's something that doesn't get, I think, talked about enough.
Exactly, 100%. That's kind of like the whole, what everyone talks about, the strategy, the risk reward, all that fun stuff as well.
One thing that we got, I think, right as an industry, at least, again, so far, halfway through the season, is stolen bases. Like, yeah. Every podcast you hear, stolen bases dry up early, get your bags early. Well, 100%. If you look at the red column in stolen bases starting around like pick 60, it's Randy Arozarena with 18 steals, which is shocking. I did not know that. Your boy Jazz with 12. Nobody has more than 5 steals after pick 66. Outside of those two,
after like round four, basically.
Yep. So like, so far that has, like, I, as an industry, we kind of that assumption. I know you've got like your John Birdie and whatever that you can pick up later if you're that lucky one person in your league. That has held true so far. Like, stolen bases really have dropped off the map after those first few rounds. So we will give credit to the larger industry for that one. That's looking like a really sharp call.
And in correlation to that, we're talking about roster construction. For those that took stolen bases early, maybe you didn't get the guys that have 5 categories or struggle a bit in power. Those guys after pick 60 or whatever, you have a lot of power guys. You know, Austin Riley with 21, Altuve, Seager, Arenado, all 16 or more. That's another double-digit guy. A lot of guys hitting for decent average too. So it's, again, it's freaking July. We're talking about roster construction. But when you look back at ADP, this is why we talk roster construction in like February. You don't always have to get the 5 categories that, you know, Roto Labs or someone says on that first pick. You need to have that by the end of the draft, and you can do that. But this another good use of this grid and chart here is to see, like you said, all the red for the stolen bases. Look where the green's at for the average. Besides the early rounds, there's a decent amount in the back end of the top 100 here. So yeah, there's ways to pencil it together that you might not stand out right away for you.
No, that's a really good point. I didn't really look too much at the average line, but you've got, you know, after pick 60, you've obviously got Goldschmidt 340, which is just absurd. Austin Riley 273, Altuve, Arenado, Abreu, JD Martinez. A lot of green and white, which is kind of middle of the road and not much red for average. That's a really good point. That also that cluster. So one of the big things, and I alluded to this before, was that like that second base cluster. It was in 15 teamers, maybe like the fifth or sixth round, there was just this massive run of second basemen and then nothing after that. So again, just looking back, it was like Javi Baez, complete bust.
Yep.
Jazz Chisholm has been, I would say, as advertised, missed some time, but like that's a win compared to some of these other guys. Brandon Lau, obviously, a lot of red there. Jorge Polanco hitting 244 with 12 homers. Jonathan India, that has been a complete disaster. I know injury related and probably playing hurt when Jonathan India was healthy, but hitting 204, two homers, one steal. And then the last guy in that group, and this is the funny part with ADP and get your guy. If you believed in Jose Altuve, which the market was relative to these other second basemen off, he's been the guy of that group that has really popped with 278, 16 homers and six steals. So it's just funny to look back, like we could have talked in March and April, and it was almost just, I'll just take any of those second basemen that are around. They're all about the same. That's not the case. It's just interesting to see, even 3 months later, like how far apart and how different your season might look if you took Brandon Lau versus Jose Altuve.
And it's also fun because the old conversation of just take the boring guys, and it so pans out. Like one of the best players in baseball here is Paul Goldschmidt, pick 66. And that was coming off a really good season last year that people were like, it's Paul Goldschmidt. He's been great. Altuve is a great example. That's why he was going behind all those other guys. It's like, he's boring. He doesn't steal anymore. He's got six steals. He might get you 10 plus steals, which would be such icing on the cake for what you expect. You're thinking maybe five or six for the season. Yep. So that's amazing. Arenado's doing his thing. Abreu's, you'd want more power, but still doing his thing. Like a lot of these really boring guys are producing very, very well. I bet you if it went even deeper in ADP, it'd be quite surprising how team boring. And that's why this is a joke that I know he'll laugh at, so I can say it. This is why Scott Genstead's doing so well. He loves playing team boring, and it's working for him very well this season. Obviously, you got to avoid injuries. That's big. But there's something to the pedigrees, man, and they're producing pretty, pretty well. So it's fun to see it all play out. Any other thoughts on the hitters here? Because I'm going to pull an audible, Ryan, which will make things easy for next week. We'll do pitching next week.
That works.
That way we don't have to rush through it. We can actually spend time on it.
Yeah, that works. That's perfect. Actually, so one last, I think that covers most of them. Actually, one other name who was super polarizing has played most of the first half, Wander Franco. Just interesting to look back and see. That 260 batting average, five homers, five steals. I know there was some missed time there. That certainly is interesting. And again, Franco could absolutely turn it on the second half and blow this away. Marcus Semien is someone who popped to me. I thought he would just be, and this is the trap that I fall into, is you look at April and Marcus Semien was absolutely terrible in April, and you just kind of, I don't have Marcus Semien on many teams. You kind of, that's your perception of how Marcus Semien is doing this year. Marcus Semien in June hit 287 with seven homers and six steals. Like, he actually isn't really that red on this sheet, where if I ran these numbers 6 weeks ago, that would be a
bright red,
disaster.
Dark red. Yeah.
So,
well, like, not even a top 100 pick, but I'd love to, like, this is why. This is an exercise I'd be willing to do for like the next 100 too, but I'm a weirdo like that. Like, I just love to see like where Kyle Schwarber ranks out on this, things like that, because he's just, his month of June is insanity, but that's a whole other time for a whole other situation. What would be fun is to keep this sheet and then compare back to it in October, because then it could justify, because Semien's already a perfect example of just what 1 month can do, but baseball's such a long season, we always preach patience. Or even just do what, like a month to month, like one of those flip books as a kid, like guys that struggled early. They're like, oh, I should cut this guy, I should whatever. And then all of a sudden it gets greener, greener, greener. It's like, oh, look, he was what we thought he was. Like, it's one of those little things. Patience is hard. I get it, but very important for the game of fantasy baseball. So
we could do a live for the watchers, for the live streamers. We could do our little flip books for each position as we go on the camera, see what happens, see what red turns to green.
But it'd be kind of fun, because I think there'd be more than people would think. Like, Simeon's a great example, just like, this is what we're at. But then a couple listener questions that we'll hit up on before we head on out of here. John Dobus, I apologize if I mispronounced that. He's always active in our questions and our listening. Orlando Arcia on the Braves, really struggling. Time to look elsewhere in dynasty leagues. We were high on him, at least a chance on him getting a chance. I have so far cut him pretty much everywhere I have had him. What do you think? Yep. This is dynasty question. It's a little different, but I think you can move on probably.
Dynasty, I think you can move on. And I think, and I know we kind of – I don't know if hyped is the right word, but we recommended Arcia as a fill-in just from the Albies injury. And, you know, it's hard. Like, I mean, Arcia is at least, he's still playing every day and he started out really hot. And so you want to kind of just jump on those guys. I mean, he didn't cost you too much in Fab. But yeah, the results have not been there since he's gotten the regular run. And so I would be looking, already have been looking, like you said, Bubba, kind of cutting him. Like that makes sense. I mean, 1-for-15 last week, hitting .212 over the last month. So yep, Arcia, if he gets hot again, you could scoop him back up the following week. It's not someone who I'm tied to, especially in dynasty. I don't know how often he would get this opportunity or this audition again in next year or the year after.
Most definitely. Robbie Lester asks, speaking of regrets, Steven Matz, what do you see rest of season? Yeah, that has been a very regretful one there. I don't even know when he's coming back from his injury, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is it's just such an unknown with a shoulder injury. I guess he's pretty far deep into his rehab, pitching, let's see, his third start in AAA.
Maybe all-star break.
So maybe he is one of those kind of all-star break guys. Matz was one of the guys where, like, the shoulder kind of clouds everything up, and this was a legitimate shoulder injury. It's not one of those all-star break rests that we were talking about earlier. But, like, I mean, Matz did have a 6 ERA, but a 2.99 xFIP. Like, the ERA indicators look really good for Matz. He's missing bats, 11%. Swinging strike rate, not keeping on the ground, which hurts. So I think it just all depends on how that shoulder holds up. But from an actual skill standpoint, like a 22% K minus walk rate is one of the best out there. So I'm not expecting him to fully break out or anything in the second half. But if that shoulder holds up, I think there's absolutely the chance that he is more of like a, I don't know, 4 ERA guy in the second half, which isn't great, but that works. That gets you out of streaming. So anything that gets you out of streaming is a good thing.
Let me throw this at you real quick. If assuming Matz comes back and the shoulder's okay, Steven Matz or Jacob Junis?
I would go Junis. I think Junis is just a little safer.
Gotcha. Ben Tidd just has a statement. He says, not sure if you need to mention this on the pod, but there's a lot of red for hitters, ADP 54 to 100, which you agreed to on Twitter, and we definitely talked about on the show.
Yep, and it's funny. Like, well, so we'll talk about pitchers next week, but a lot of pitchers around that range, there's a lot of green. So yep. If you pick the right ones.
Nate Curtis asks, middle infielders, like he's talking about the chart, like Jonathan India and Bo Bichette, those are definite ones we hit on. Both India, I even have India bench this week with 3 Great American Small Park games.
Yeah,
it hurts. It really hurts. Like, it was very, like, part of me almost said, no, it's Jonathan India, but I'm like, it's Jonathan India right now. Like, I'm expecting a massive weekend for anybody that's keeping track.
And just one thing on that, like, I know I got to run in a couple minutes, but like, we talked so much about in the preseason how first base is shallow and it's just an absolute given that middle infield is deep. we don't really know if that's the case. And you're seeing that this year. Like, there have been, like, Anthony Rizzo has
the first baseman are producing in a big way.
First base Crone, is actually, Hoskins, yeah, like, exactly. Like, CJ Crone is an absolute monster. Like Josh Bell has been hitting. Like,
yeah.
First base, if we, and everyone said first base was shallow, get your first baseman or wait. That has not been the case. And most years that's true, not just first base specifically, but what you think is a deep or shallow position during the season or before the season is not always the case.
I think one thing we should probably clarify in the future, shallow might mean more like shallow once guys get hurt, the depth in that regard. But to start the season, it's probably not that bad. Brandon W, is the birdie ride coming to an end? Is Wendell sneakily going to have more value rest of the season? Is it sacrilegious to even ask this? I was worried, but he's let off the last couple of games again. So I think we're still good. When Jazz comes back, that's the telling point.
It's funny. It's not sacrilegious. And it's funny the timing of this. So Ray Murphy put out a Playing Time Tomorrow column on Friday at HQ. The title of the column is Bye Bye Birdie. And so Ray just kind of, I mean, it's speculative, but Ray basically came to that conclusion that once everyone, and again, not a given, but I shouldn't say once, if everyone comes back and is healthy at the same time in Miami, John Birdie doesn't really have a spot. I know he's played a little bit of outfield, but John Birdie's probably a 3 to 4 game a week guy if everyone is all healthy at the same time. Now, what are the chances of that happening? Probably pretty low. That's why Birdie is where he is in the first place. And even still, if depending on how badly you need stolen bases, maybe you still play John Birdie 3 or 4 times a week because he'll still get you 5 or 6 steals. So
definitely.
Last
one for you, then we'll get you out of here. Lil Book of Calm, over under 70 innings pitched rest of season for Spencer Strider.
Really good thought. I'm going to say under. I just, given the history, given the transition from bullpen to rotation, like the volume has not been there for Spencer Strider. Drafted in 2020, so we don't know what he did in 2020. In 2021, he had like just under 100 innings, and he's already at 65 this season. They're going to treat him with kid gloves, as they should. I mean, it's an amazing story, but 70 innings, I'll take the under.
And then buy or sell top 15 starting pitcher next year. I'd say under or sell, but
I'd say, yeah, I always don't know how to answer above, below, whatever. Yeah. I think he'd be outside the top 15. Just
that's
because
where I'm at, yeah.
I would wager basically any pitcher to be outside the top 15 next season just because of injuries, and especially like with Strider's lack of volume and just youth. Certainly would love to see him. He's fun as heck to watch, but I'll play it safe. I'll say outside top 15.
Shout out to Joe Met in the chat. Thanks for the kind words. Wanted to bring that up before we head on out of here. But Ryan, as always, great episode. I'll get you out of here. We'll do it again next week. We'll talk pitching. Be a ton of fun. But yeah, thanks again, my friend. Enjoy your weekend.
You do the same. Baseball in a couple hours. Let's do this.
Yeah. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm at BDAntrick, and this was another episode of Bubba in the Bloom. Catch you guys later.
Brew Baker.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.